You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere. Here are your hosts, Richard Justice and Allison Footer.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West. We are looking at an interesting kind of two-team race, but sort of three-team race in the West. Three very good teams, the Angels, the A's, and the Mariners. The difference between the three is, of course, the Mariners are kind of surging, and the A's are dipping a little bit, and the Angels are sort of coasting. So this is a thing that we thought would come down to the wire, and it looks like it's going to, but certainly thinking about Seattle in October, it's got to be pretty exciting, Richard.
Yeah, the thought of Seattle any month of the year is pretty exciting. And right now, they're a better team than the other two. Like, you look at Tampa Bay in the AL East and say they're the best team. But I don't know if you can make up all that ground that they've lost. But certainly, they've got a great chance to be playing October baseball, and that would be a pretty cool thing. And otherwise, I think the Angels and the A's are going to play, I think it's 13 more times this year, 10 more times this year. So it's going to be settled on the field. Maybe that's the way it ought to be. That's the reason we have an unbalanced schedule. We're joined now by Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Angels. There's a lot. What are there, 10 more A's-Angels games to go, Alden, including about seven in the next 2 weeks?
Yep, seven more.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out. I want to start by asking you about Matt Shoemaker, but I'm going to start by asking you about Josh Hamilton. And you broke the story on Sunday that he was not benched on Sunday, that he went into Mike Socha and said, I need a day. And that's pretty unusual to do when a guy is struggling. And although we've seen it through the years that when Josh struggles, I mean, he really struggles. And he was not in the lineup yesterday. Where do we go now with Josh Hamilton as far as the lineup card and the Angels?
Well, I'll tell you what we know for sure. And there's very little that we know for sure right now, just simply because it's hard to identify where Josh Hamilton is and why he's struggling in this way. But he went into Mike Socha's office on Sunday and asked for the day because he felt like, and this is a quote, that he was kind of spinning his wheels. And just that he admitted that the slump was getting to him mentally. And if you watched him swing the bat and miss on fastballs that he normally hits out and just give away at bats the way he was, it'd be pretty easy to identify that. And then Mike Socha said, you know, well, why don't you just take 2 days? So he took Monday in Boston off, and the plan is for him to show up early to the field today, have one-on-one sessions with the two hitting coaches, Don Baylor and Dave Hanson, and just find an approach that works that he could carry into the game. Mike Socha has been reluctant to move him out of the cleanup spot all year, but I would not be surprised if Josh Hamilton is hitting lower in the lineup today, maybe Howie Kendrick bats cleanup, whatever. Something has to be done about Josh, and I don't think continuing to bat him fourth and continuing to put that pressure on him is really helping him at this point. And, you know, the thing about Josh Hamilton is, and Richard, you've covered him, so much of it is mental for him. So much of it is his surroundings and that support system. And, you know, earlier in the year, it was easy to identify his struggles because it was tangible. He was seeing a major league leading amount of breaking balls. He was chasing pitches out of the strike zone. He obviously needed to be more selective. Now, he's missing everything. He's missing fastballs out over the plate. Pitchers are challenging him on the inside corner. He's not getting around on pitches. It just looks like this is really wearing on him. And, you know, and he used to go through funks like this in Texas, but he would really, you know, bounce back pretty quickly. His slumps tend to prolong a little bit more with the Angels. I don't know what it is. People keep bringing up the support system and how, you know, Ron Washington talked to him about life and all that stuff 24/7. Now, they built their entire organization to make sure that Josh Hamilton was on track. And maybe that's the kind of support he needs, that constant 24/7 monitoring that he maybe doesn't have with the Angels. I'm not sure what it is, but he's just not right now. And, you know, the Angels have been able to persevere without it. They haven't gotten that typical cleanup production from Josh Hamilton all year. But I'm not sure if they could continue to. They've been winning games in the second half, but, you know, 13 of their 16 games have been won by two runs or less. They need that offensive production, and they really need Josh Hamilton to get back on track. But I don't know if anybody in that organization has answers right now.
You know, one of the weird things about him is, as bad as he looks, you got to keep writing, probably, the way you look at it, you probably got to keep playing him. Because I remember a game against, I think it was the Blue Jays 2 years ago. He was sick with the flu. He didn't want to be there. You know what his body language is like at home plate in the outfield. He clearly didn't want to be on the field. He comes to bat in the 12th inning with the Rangers down by a run on a day when he looked like the worst player on earth, and he hit the ball over the center field wall. And I guess all you can say is it's been in there before. We assume it'll be in there in the past. Anyway, that's my monologue. Allison, ask Alden the question and get us on something more pleasant.
Oh, well, this isn't really as pleasant, but Mike Trout, something that we've never talked about, we never ever thought we would talk about, is he's run into a little bit of a slump himself. Very high strikeout totals. He had a recent 0 for 16, 7 strikeouts. He works a lot of deep counts, which they like about that, but is it hurting him now? I mean, can you kind of explain that line of thinking?
Yeah, he's a guy who he's always worked deep counts, and I think that's a credit to him, because there's not many guys who are 22, 23 years old that are as comfortable hitting with two strikes as Mike Trout is. And, you know, Mike Trout sees, I think, he's been in two-strike counts more than anybody in baseball, except, I think, two other hitters. He's put the first pitch in play less times than about 500-some-odd people in baseball. And, you know, it's kind of a constant battle with Mike Trout. He's always fighting himself about whether or not to be aggressive on the first pitch. He said recently that when he is aggressive on that first pitch, he tends to his swing gets a little bit too big, and he's not as, you know, centered on going to right center field, and he feels like it hurts him a little bit. But, you know, this is a byproduct of a guy who works a lot of deep counts. If you're working a lot of deep counts, you're going to strike out a lot, and then sometimes, you know, you're going to go on little stumps because of it. I think it's an absolute marvel that a guy could strike out as often as Mike Trout does and still get on base 40% of the time. I think that just speaks to how great a hitter Mike Trout is. But imagine if he cut those strikeouts down, where his batting average would be, where his on-base percentage would be. And I think that's going to be the thing that Mike Trout struggled with throughout his career. This is something maybe the next step in his maturation as a hitter is cutting down those strikeouts, knowing when to be aggressive early in counts, knowing when to jump on that first pitch fastball. You know, sometimes you kind of feel it with him, though, when he's about to get on a really hot tear, and it seems like he's kind of turning the corner a little bit. He had a couple of hits to end Sunday's game, and then yesterday in Fenway Park, those first two at-bats, I mean, he hit two bullets. He hit a line drive to center field that was about 2 inches away from going over the fence. You feel like he's got a dominant run in him because he's kind of been, you know, treading water for the last 4 or 5 weeks. And, you know, we've said it before, it seems like the MVP is his to lose right now, because I don't know that anybody has really stepped up in the American League. If he can go on a nice little run for the next 3-4 weeks, I think he could really put himself in good position. And, you know, there's really no reason to believe that he can't.
Alden, with Tyler Skaggs out for the year, with C.J. Wilson struggling, Matt Shoemaker has been a godsend for that rotation.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about, how did they get him in 2008? Was he undrafted? Was he an injured player from Eastern Michigan? I vaguely remember the story why he wasn't drafted.
Yeah, he was a redshirt junior out of Eastern Michigan. That redshirt junior year was actually the first year that he was actually a starting pitcher. He actually came to that school as a pretty good corner infielder. And he had scouts show up. A lot of them told him, look, we're going to pick you this round, we're going to pick you in this round. He was certain that he was going to get drafted at some point in 2008. And all the rounds went by. Matt Shoemaker was in his living room following it on his laptop, round 50 passes, and he is not taken in the draft. He couldn't believe it.
Wow.
He circled back with some scouts later, and they told him, you know what, maybe they saw you as a senior sign. He was all set to go back to cash in on his final year of eligibility at Eastern Michigan, and one of the Angel scouts gave him a call, told him, look, you know, we know you want to sign. we'll give you $1,000 and you could, you know, just come and try to make your way up the organization. And, you know, I talked to DePoto about him recently, and DePoto told me that he still marvels at Matt Shoemaker, and he wonders how we could go 50 rounds in a draft and nobody takes Matt Shoemaker. And, well, the thing is, he's not really big. He's not a guy who throws very hard. At that point, he really didn't have command of more than a couple of pitches. But, I mean, he is a guy who just keeps his head down, keeps working. He doesn't really make the moment too big. He showed up here in the major leagues, and he's already beaten Cliff Lee, David Price, Justin Verlander. So many aces that Chris Sale, so many guys who have pitched against him that he's done better against. And the funny thing, too, is he never even put up good numbers in the minor leagues. The entirety of the last 2 years, he was in AAA. And, you know, he didn't pitch very well. I know it's a tough pitcher's league, the Pacific Coast League. But the Angels keep track of a certain amount of stats that they feel like players can parlay that into success in the big leagues. And for Matt Shoemaker was always the most likely pitcher to get ahead in counts, stay ahead in counts, and put hitters away when they're ahead. Because he just throws strikes. He just goes after hitters. He now has 4 effective pitches. He's got a great split-finger fastball. And they kept him around. They could have lost him in the Rule 5 draft. They kept him on the 40-man roster. And he's come up here and just thrown strikes. And I'll tell you what, I don't know where they would be without Matt Shoemaker. And it sounds crazy to even say this, but they don't really have any starting pitching help in their minor league system. And now that Tyler Skaggs is out, they're down to 5 starters, and that's it. They need Matt Shoemaker to step up in a pennant race, and, man, he's given them everything they could have ever hoped for. It's really a great story, and it's a great testament to just continue to work hard and, you know, not worry about where you're drafted, not worry about what an organization thinks of you, and just fight your way up a system. Matt Shoemaker is a huge testament to that.
That's pretty cool. When a team wins the division, there's always stories like that. We appreciate you joining us, Alden. We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you so much. We've got Jane Lee, who covers the A's, here with us. Allison, about July 31st, we assumed the Tigers and A's would be playing in the ALCS or the ALDS or something like that. It's amazing how plans go awry sometimes, isn't it?
Yes. I think that we were talking about how cute these exchanges between Billy Dean and Dave Dombrowski were, and now we're kind of wondering if their teams are even going to be at the top of their divisions when the season is over. So sometimes when you take a key piece out of a team, even to get a keyer piece, sometimes it doesn't work out the way it should. So we still have some time, and I don't know that this is really trying to panic yet, but you have to wonder what's going on with the A's, considering that they're having a very bad August and they're not in first place anymore. Let's play with Jane Lee. Let's get her opinions on this, because really she's with the team every day, and what do we know? So, Jane, this is a question that everybody asks, and it's a little bit of a silly question, but the team's overall attitude right now, are they kind of like shrugging this off like, look, it's a bad stretch that we haven't really had this year, or do you sense a little bit of tension going on?
I think they'd like to shake this off as just that, you know, thinking that it's okay, every team goes through this type of stretch at some point during the season, and this is just our turn. But given the time of year, I think there is cause for a little bit of concern. I mean, the Angels kind of jumped over them for a half-game lead in the West, and those two teams still play each other 10 times the rest of the season, including 7 times by the end of this month. And, you know, you go back to when Billy Bean started making moves at the beginning of July, and he said these moves weren't made for the postseason. They were made, you know, to win the division. And we're seeing now, you know, just how serious this organization was and the fact that they know, you know, probably better than anyone because of what they did to the Rangers the past couple of years, you know, coming from behind, that lead can be taken away so easily. And we've seen just how easily it's happened here. I don't think that they'll continue this way. They're too good to have, you know, such a big funk like this. But, I mean, there is concern just because, you know, you can't help but look at the timing of it all with the trade and with Cespedes gone. And, yes, Lester's one of the best, you know, pitchers in the game, but he can't help a team every day. He can only help every fifth day. And, you know, even on Sunday, I mean, he wasn't, you know, his dominant self. He was good, but this team isn't scoring runs right now, and just good, you know, isn't going to cut it. I mean, this is a team that scored 3 runs or fewer, and I believe it's 14 of their last 18 games. And just, you know, they've always said they're not a team that relies on one guy, but at the same time, they also took away one big power bat. And I Cespedes hasn't done a ton for the Red Sox, but when he has done something, you know, it's meant a lot. And I think the A's are missing that presence right now.
Jane, as Billy and Bob Melvin, David Force look at the club today, is the bigger worry, do you think, it's in the rotation? You know, with Gray and Kazmir won once this month, or with Gomes and Moss and Lowry and Vaught, name it, not hitting. What is their biggest area of concern, would you think?
I think it has to be the offense, because, you know, even when Sonny Gray and Scott Kazmir aren't at their best, they're still pretty good. You know, these are pitchers that, you know, particularly Sonny, he has had his stretches this year where, you know, he's not throwing 6 or 7 or 8 shutout innings, but, you know, he's giving up a couple runs. But his ERA is still under 3, and, I mean, so is Kazmir's. And so, you know, you can't expect them to go out and give you 8 scoreless innings every time, as nice as that would be. And, you know, I hear from people on Twitter, you know, saying things about, you know, guys like Gray and Kazmir and even Samardzija, you know, well, we need an ace-like performance tonight. Well, you can't rely on that every single night. You know, your offense has to score runs. And, I mean, if Samardzija's giving up 3 runs over 7 innings, that's a quality start. That's a good start, and your team should be able to give you, you know, at least 4 runs to get the win, and that they're just not doing that right now. So I think, you know, the pitching's not going to be much of a concern outside of maybe Jason Hamill, who is struggling again. I mean, the other 4 guys, they're going to give you a quality start every time they go out there. The offense, on the other hand, you know, you do worry about. They have faced really good pitching the past couple of weeks, but you know what? Most teams do, and they can't really use that as an excuse. And not that they have been, but they've mentioned it recently. But, you know, they're just not getting the same contribution from their outfield that they were when Tepes was there. And it might just be a matter of a bunch of guys struggling at the same time. And so you have to think, well, you know, they'll come out of it eventually. But how much longer can you wait? And with the Angels coming to town this weekend, and then they go right to Anaheim for 4 games. And, you know, no team has time to play catch-up this time of year. So they do have to find it quickly, and I think it goes back to the offense more than anything.
Do you think Jason Hamill it sounds just from reading some of his quotes that maybe he's just getting a little weary of having to repeat the same, I'm fine, you know, like, no, really, I have a good attitude toward this, and I'm just going to put this one behind me. And it seems like that has to start getting to him a little bit, because he just seems to be a little baffled about what's going on.
Yeah, I think everyone is. And, you know, it seemed like he kind of was over that hump of, you know, I'm going to go out and, you know, put in the extra work and come back in 5 days and, you know, be better. And we were hearing that so often. And then he did come back and he was better for 2 starts. And then his last start, it was kind of the same thing all over again. And I just don't know how much longer, you know, they can be real patient with him. They're afforded 2 off days this week, so it's likely they do skip him. Whether they bring him back into the rotation, that's in question right now. They could slot Jeffy Chavez back into the rotation. He's been pitching out of the bullpen, and you know, you have to think that the rest who's been afforded out of the bullpen would only serve him well in returning to the rotation. But they also have a guy like Drew Pomeranz in AAA who is stretched out. He has been pitching well, and you know, before he punched a chair and broke his hand, he was pitching really well for the A's. So maybe they try him out. And if that doesn't work out, you know, they still have Chavez. And in the meantime, you know, watch Hamill on the side and hope that he kind of returns to form. But it is almost just, I don't want to say a tiring act, because it's not like he's trying to go out there and do the same thing over again. But he just can't kick the ball down in the strike zone. I mean, he's high, you know, he's all over the place. And, you know, you have to be lucky if you're a team and your only concern out of five starters is one, but when you're a team in contention and, you know, on the hunt for a division title, you know, every 5 days, you know, any day is important. And Hamill's just, you know, it's wearing on the bullpen, and, you know, at this time of year, the bullpen's, you know, the last thing you want to tire out. So it'll be interesting to see over the next week, you know, the decision they make in regards to him and the domino effect it creates, you know, elsewhere.
Jane, you learn a lot about managers in times like this. How has Bob Melvin handled all of this?
You know, he's a pretty calm guy. I do sense that it's wearing on him a little bit, and you can't blame him. I mean, this is a team that's been so good all year, and they really haven't gone through something like this. And I think there's just, you know, there's general frustration, but not too much concern, because I think they realize, you know, internally how good of a team they are, and they can't let, you know, the loss of Cespedes affect them when they have a John Lester standing in the same room. And I think, you know, Melvin always says they're a team that's really good about just insulating within themselves, not worrying about what people are saying outside of the clubhouse or about them and what's going on. And I mean, as big of a downstretch as this has been for them, you know, he's kind of kept his cool. He did have a little bit of a talk with them this past weekend in Atlanta. And, you know, hopefully the off day they had yesterday at home kind of allows them to reset going forward. I think that might be, you know, just what they needed. So they had played 17 straight. And so to have not just yesterday's off day, but they have another Thursday, I think that could maybe benefit them.
Well, usually we're all sunny and happy when we're talking about the A's. This is a little gloomy, but there's still plenty of season left. So we'll be checking in with you next week. And who knows, maybe things will turn around for them. Jane Lee, thank you very much. We'll be talking to you soon.
Let's bring in Greg Johns, who covers the Mariners for MLB.com. Greg, is there a sense that I guess there's a growing confidence in the clubhouse that this season that started with such optimism has a chance to have a pretty nice finish?
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, it's been a while since the Mariners have been in a playoff contention, and they're just enjoying it. You know, Lloyd McClendon has wisely, I think, said, enjoy this journey. I mean, let's go out there and have fun. Let's, you know, don't take this for granted, but, you know, enjoy what's going on. And you know, Lloyd's enjoying it himself. You know, this is a guy that was the skipper in Pittsburgh for 5 years with some teams that certainly weren't contending. And he went to Detroit as the hitting coach under Jim Leland and found out a lot about, you know, a club that contended every year and got in World Series and did good things. And, you know, he's brought some of that with him to Seattle and is imparting that now on a young team that hasn't been there much. And you talk to the guys, they are enjoying it. They're, you know, they're having fun playing games that mean something here as the calendar keeps ticking forward. You know, every series is starting to get a little bigger. You know, they played in Detroit, won two out of three there, and that was a huge series for them. And now in Philly and heading to Boston, you know, these are games that, you know, it's not easy winning on the road, but this is a club that has one of the best records in baseball on the road. So, you know, they've proven that they can win in tough situations, and it's certainly going to be tough down the stretch, but they're right there.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Chris Young. He's just a fascinating study. 35 years old. He's had a lot of past issues with his shoulder that have just, you know, created a lot of just injury issues over the years. It seems like he's reinvented himself. Is that accurate? I mean, he's 12-6 this year, 7-2 in his last like 12 starts with a very low ERA. His velocity is lower, so it's not like he's blowing anything past anybody. Was it just a matter of him having to just kind of overhaul everything and just change his delivery and all that, or what's going on with him?
The thing with Chris Young, and I think he's one of the best stories in baseball really this year, it's all about being healthy. You know, if you look at Chris's history, when he's been healthy, he's been good. I mean, this is a guy that was an all-star with the Padres in 2007, and was you know, good the few years before that, and since then, when he's been able to be out on the mound throwing, he's done well. but he just hasn't been able to stay healthy, and it boils down to a right shoulder that they just couldn't figure out what was going on. He had two surgeries on that thing, and it just didn't help, and he kept rehabbing, working back, and he just wasn't right. And about a year ago, they went in and doctors figured out something that's called thoracic outlet syndrome, which, as Chris explains it to me, is basically like a pinched nerve on a large degree. You got a set of nerves going through a tunnel over to your shoulder, and it was compressed in there. They went in and relieved that, and it sounds a lot like the problems he's had over the previous 5 years really could have been solved if they just figured that out sooner. He's healthy this year. The shoulder's good. But when he pitches, he's a 6'10" guy with a very unique delivery that comes over the top. He pitches up a lot more than most guys are used to. He comes at a different angle, and he's smart. This is a guy that went to Princeton. He understands what he's doing. He studies like as well as anybody I've seen. You know, a Jamie Moyer type approach to the game. You know, just looking at guys and their history and how he can approach them. When he's right, which he is this year, he's a good pitcher, and he's been a huge boon to this team. As Lloyd McClennan calls him, a godsend. He came out of nowhere. They signed him just before the start of the regular season, and he's been the number three guy in a rotation with the top three of Felix, Iwakuma, and Young. Between the three of them, they're 36-15 with about a 2.5 ERA, and as good as any three in baseball, better than any three really at this point.
Probably a guy went to Princeton. Probably a guy he couldn't get into Texas. I don't know what the deal is there, but I guess Princeton's a pretty good school. Hey, Chris, so one of the things that interests is fascinating, and one of the reasons Jack Serringer got the job was because he built a great farm system in Milwaukee. It appears he has done the same in Seattle. The club has evolved both through trades, but now Chris Taylor is the starting shortstop. He's hitting .344. Was it a tough decision to make this move? And what has the kid brought to the club? And does hitting .344, do they think he's the real deal?
Well, it's interesting because when they last year or two, I kept hearing about this kid that was coming up that they felt was a lot of people in the organization thought was their best defensive shortstop. He's just a real natural at that position. And they liked him with the glove, and he kept hitting. And he was hitting this year. Brad Miller started the season and won that job, and rightfully so, with a huge spring. But when the season started, Brad just didn't hit well. Taylor kept hitting down in Tacoma, and I think would have been up earlier. But right about the time they were going to bring him up, he broke a little finger on his hand sliding into second base. That set him back about a month. When he came back, started hitting again, and Brad still heated up a little bit, but the average is down around 200, and opened the door for Taylor. When they brought him up, the kid came in, they put him in there, and he's been hitting at the big league level. So he's a real solid glove out there, and he's done a nice job. They're not putting too much pressure on him, obviously low in the order, but he keeps getting on base, he keeps looking real strong. So he is one of those kids. They've had a couple shortstops. You know, Nick Franklin, they traded away Brad Miller that won the job, and now Chris Taylor that's come up and taken over from him. So all young guys that keep kind of rotating through, they're looking for the answer. And it's pretty early with Taylor, but they certainly like what they've seen so far.
Michael Saunders is an interesting story, too. He's been out since mid-July with an oblique strain. He's on a rehab assignment, then he left for paternity leave, back to rehab. So I saw a funny quote from Lloyd McClendon just about what happens when he returns, and he says, "We ain't here to get timing down, we're here to win." And it does present an interesting conundrum for this time of year, because you really can't let a guy come in and sort of, you know, get his feet back under him and get his timing, get his swing back. He needs to come in and be contributing right away. And I know Andy Chavez has been playing a lot out there. So what does happen when Saunders is ready to come back?
That's a real interesting situation right now, because when Saunders got hurt, they didn't have Austin Jackson. They didn't have Kristen Orfia. He got hurt right before the trade deadline on rehab. He's got an oblique. Seems to be healthy now. He's down in Tacoma, hitting pretty well down there. But as you mentioned, His wife had their second child. He took off for a few days. Now he's just back, starting up his rehab again. To me, it's pretty clear if they had a roster spot, he'd probably be back up here. But there's not an easy situation right now because they've got Andy Chavez and Kristen Orphy, putting a pretty good platoon in right field. And if Saunders comes up, somebody's going to have to go. So it seems to me that they're kind of just slow playing it right now, letting him get good and healthy down in Tacoma, keep hitting well, so when he does come up, he's ready to go. But they've got a tough decision there as to where exactly he's going to fit in on the roster. So, that's a testament to their depth a little bit and what they did at the deadline. And it's also a tribute to Andy Chavez, who is a veteran guy that he's just one of those guys that seems to do the things you need to win. And every manager that Andy's played for, kind of falls in love with him. And Lloyd McClendon, no different. He's just one of those guys that just he plays a very good outfield and solid bat. He's not a big bopper by any means. And Saunders definitely more of a threat offensively, but Andy, he moves runners, he does the right things, comes up with the big hits, and right now he's still there, and what they do with Saunders will be interesting, but that's one of those decisions going to have to come here in the next week or so.
Greg Johns, we appreciate you joining us today. The Mariners are in a good spot to make the full playoffs for the first time in 2001. I hope you're enjoying it. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks a bunch. Let's bring in Brian McTaggart of MLB.com. Brian, what the heck has gotten into Chris Carter? This is the guy they hoped they were getting at last year, right?
Yeah, I mean, he came as a guy who was going to hit a lot of home runs and he would strike out a little bit. But through the first half of the season, he was hitting home runs, not a lot, but he was still hitting some home runs, striking out a lot, not as much as last year, but he wasn't hitting much of anything else. His batting average was .180. And I mean, I think if you would have, if you give the Astros some truth serum, I think they were getting to the point to where they were going to have to decide what to do with him, whether to pull the plug or designated him or something. But since July 1st, he's been the most feared slugger, basically, in baseball. 16 home runs since July 1st. Nobody else has more than nine and leads the majors in RBIs and slugging and all that stuff since July 1st. And he's hitting for a batting average over .300 as well. Basically, what it comes down to, he's shortened his stroke a little bit. Really hasn't hurt his power at all, but he's shortened his stroke. He's being more selective. He's worked on this stuff all year, and what made it click, I'm not sure, but it's certainly working for him now. It's been a good six-week run. Can he keep it up over the final 6 weeks of the season? If so, the Astros got to feel pretty good about having Carter as the lineup next year.
Do you think he's in the plans for 2015?
Yeah, I definitely do. If he keeps hitting like this, for sure. You asked me that 6 weeks ago, I would have said no. I would have said they can't afford to have him in the lineup every day, not putting the ball in play and hitting the occasional home run. It's just not worth it. But the hitter that he's become now, if he keeps this up, he could wreak some havoc over a full season. It's just a matter of can he keep it up.
Didn't John Mailey, his hitting coach, I mean, he seemed to have had a different outlook on Carter for most of the season. I mean, he never really, I mean, I guess the hitting coach isn't going to say it even if he does, but he didn't seem to really give up on him. He saw a lot of what he could be. And I know that they worked very, very hard, but just as far as just like recognizing pitches, pitch selection, I mean, things like that, it's not something you can really teach as much as I guess it's just repetition after repetition until they get it.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, and I know that Mailey's been working with him a lot in the video room as well. One of the things that Carter was doing, he was swinging and missing at a lot of the pitches that were in the zone, which normally you think guys striking out would swing at pitches that are out of the zone, and if you put something in the zone, they would hit it. But he was hitting some bad balls and then swinging and missing the pitches in the zone. So he's kind of, whatever they did, Mailey kind of worked with him on that, and now those balls that he was missing are fouling off. Now he's really squaring them up and hitting them out of the ballpark.
Brian, when the Astros called up Fulton Nevich to finish the season working out of the bullpen, was the plan going forward to have him in the rotation on opening day 2015?
I think so. Jeff Luno said that he'll come to camp next year as a starter, and I think he would have to earn one of those rotation spots. And I mean, that's getting a little tougher to do if you consider what Oberholzer's doing, and then Colin McHugh has an ERA of 3, and Keuchel's an ace. So now Feldman's going to be back. So, unless they make a trade, you might only have one rotation spot going into spring training that's kind of up for grabs right now. And you know, I think he'll be one of the guys that is front and center in that competition. And you have some guys pitching very well at AAA right now, and Tropiano and Wojciechowski. So they're going to have some really, you know, promising young options for the rotation. But I think ideally they would like, you know, Fulton Evers to take that next step and to get that secondary stuff over the plate more and get people off his fastball and start his major league career as a starter in the rotation next year.
What do you make of John Singleton now that we've pretty far into his being called up and his sampling on the major league level, and obviously the returns aren't wonderful, but are they concerned, or is this part of the learning process, or are these growing pains? What do you think about him?
Well, if they're concerned, they're really not saying. I mean, I think, you know, they got to be disappointed, I think, in what he's done so far. And he hits a few balls a mile, as we saw the other day, but, you know, still striking out, not putting the ball in play. And even defensively, he has not played well. He's been really shaky at picking balls out of the dirt, which is, you know, a big part of the first baseman's job is to save his infielders and finish those plays. And you know, they're going to be patient because they know that he put up good numbers in AAA. They know he's got massive power and could be a guy that could hit 40 home runs. And right now they have a lot of time invested in him, and now they have a lot of money invested in him. You know, he's got the contract, so I think they'll give him a very long leash to figure out what he can do. I think no matter what happens over the final 6 weeks of the season, he's going to be the opening day first baseman, and he'll probably have all of next year to try to prove he's a productive major league player. But they've already, you know, they already have him under contract. They give him all that money, so he's their guy going forward. And maybe he'll be, maybe he'll be one of these Carter types that comes around. Or you remember George Springer the first month really struggled at the plate, but Singleton has struggled for quite a long time now. And but they're going to keep running him out there every day to see if he can figure it out.
Mark Appel has made four starts at AA. Do they have they seen encouraging signs consistently enough to think he has turned some kind of corner, or how do they feel about it?
Yeah, I think they're pretty happy about it. I think Appel and Lancaster were just not a good mix for a lot of reasons, and that's kind of the thing we've always feared, is they would send one of their young pitchers to Lancaster and he would get shelled, and you know, it damages his psyche. And I think that's exactly what happened with Appel, and whether that changes how they deal with Lancaster going forward, I don't know. Some pitchers have gone there and pitched well, like Brady Rogers last year and Josh Hader this year. But as far as Appel goes, the stuff has always been there. The stuff is still there, still throwing hard. And now that he's racking up quality starts at AA, it's a good sign. And barring injury, it looks like he'll come to spring training. We talked about competing for spots in the rotation, and maybe he's another guy that could be in the rotation early next year if he keeps it up and then comes to camp next year and has some competitiveness.
Overall, just looking sort of at Bo Porter, kind of at the front office, the dynamic with the team, even though they still lose plenty of games, they do have a lot of encouraging moments. And just the overall attitude of, let's start with just, I guess, the players in the clubhouse and that day-to-day dynamic. Do they have a pretty good attitude? Do they like playing for their manager? Do they sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, in the next couple of years? What do you make of that?
Well, it depends who you talk to. I mean, there are some players, I guess some of the more heady players, the way I'll put it, who, especially early in the year, were just frustrated with, I guess it was when Springer and Singleton weren't here, and they thought their team was putting too much emphasis on the minor leagues. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, as a group, they see what's going on, and they know that the, you know, you mentioned the win total, it's not a great barometer, but, you know, they are going to win quite a few more games. They do have to feel good about Springer, the rotation. I mean, players can look around and see things taking shape a little bit, and I talked to Jason Castro about that, and compared to last year to this year, and he says it's way different. He said it's just a lot more fun to come to the ballpark every day, and he thinks they're closer now than he thought they would be last year after they lost 111 games. And as far as Bo goes, I mean, I think they like playing for him. For a lot of these guys, it's their first big league manager, so they don't know any different, but He's very much a player's manager, and you know, I haven't heard a whole lot of whining about Bo or any of his tactics or anything as far as the players are concerned.
Brian, one of the guys they got in the Jared Kozar deal was Jake Marisnik, who's played well since he came here. What did they like about him, and what do they see as his role going forward?
Well, they like he's got a lot of speed, very, very athletic. I kind of compare him to Brian Bogusevic. Hopefully he'll turn into a better hitter than Bogusevic. Now, you got to remember, Bogusevic was drafted as a pitcher and didn't hit for a few years. So when he made the transition in 08 back to a hitter, I think he was kind of behind the eight ball. But Aristic is very athletic. He can play all three positions in the outfield. The big thing is whether he can hit or not. And so far, since he's been here, he's done a pretty nice job hitting. He's not going to hit for a lot of power. But if they get him and put him in the lineup with Dexter Fowler, and if Springer comes back, that's three very athletic outfielders who can cover a lot of ground, and you know, hopefully they can hit as well, and that gives them plenty of options going forward and into next year, depending what they want to do with Fowler. You know, maybe at some point in the offseason, they entertain a trade for Fowler, or during the season, maybe they can get something for him. And then they could put Springer in center, and they have Marisnik they can feel good about starting as well. So, also in that trade, I mean, you can't downplay the draft pick was very huge for them. Remember, they got a draft pick last year for Bud Norrison, and they're really high on Colin Moran, the double A third baseman. Gives them a little bit of that third base depth, the upper levels that they've been lacking.
Interesting times for the Astros. Brian McTaggart joining us from New York. When you come back to Houston, we'd appreciate one of those I Love New York T-shirts. I know you've been shopping for them, and we appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you when you come home. Let's bring in our friend T.R. Sullivan, covers the Rangers for MLB.com. T.R., are the Rangers reaching any level of excitement about having the number one pick in the draft in 2015?
Yeah, I think privately, I don't think they're out gloating about it. But, you know, you talk to a couple of club officials, and they say, yeah, it's been a bad year. But, you know, number one, we can rebound quickly. Number two, you know, you look at the Dodgers, they had a bad year and ended up with Clayton Kershaw one time. And the Tigers had a bad year and they ended up with Justin Verlander, you know, there is some benefit to that. So I think privately they are, you know, really looking at finding an impact player next year, what could be one of the top two or three picks.
It's kind of interesting. I mean, we kind of, you know, joke about how many pitchers they've used and how many players they've used. 2 weeks until September call-ups, and maybe a little bit less. I was reading some of your coverage, and it's sort of interesting your comment on Derek Holland. He's really wanting to come back and be a part of things before the season is over, and you're not sure that the Rangers are going to give him a look. Kind of alluded to the fact that they just might not, maybe I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth, but like sort of how this whole injury started, that they may not want to give him any kind of rewards to end the season. Is that accurate, or could you kind of expound on that a little bit?
Well, number one, he hasn't pitched well on rehab assignment. You know, last outing, he only went by 3 2/3 innings, something like that. So he hasn't really stretched out well enough, and he hasn't really pitched well enough to come back. You know, I think, number one, the Rangers are very gun-shy about, you know, anybody coming back from injury. I think they're feeling, let's just get them all to the offseason healthy, let them go through a full offseason, normal offseason, do the normal work. So I don't think they want to push anybody back, and I think Holland is kind of in that group. He's pitching tonight in Round Rock, he's pitching on Tuesday night in Round Rock. We'll see how he does there. But I think they're going to be very cautious about it.
And, T.R., going forward, do they have confidence that Holland, that Harrison, I guess you could even throw Darvish into that they're going to join Tepish and Nick Martinez and whoever else is in the rotation, and that they're going to have a competitive – winning rotation next year? Do they feel good about what they're going to have in 2015?
No. I mean, Darvish should be fine. You know, the only thing about Darvish is he hasn't done it for a full season yet. He's not showing he has the 162-game endurance, but he still should be good to go next year. Holland should. I mean, he's dealing with a knee problem, not an arm problem. Holland should be fine. Matt Harrison has a bad back, and it's a congenital condition. It's not something that heals. It's something that he has to live with, and there's some concern that he won't be able to pitch again. He said he's not going to start throwing until November. So we're not going to know until December, January, February if he's really got a chance to come back again. But I think that this team goes in the offseason. They're going to need at least one or two pitchers from outside to come in and help this team if they expect to win. I mean, Holland and Darvish should be fine. We're still finding out about Martinez and Tepish. They may bring Colby Lewis back, but he's going to be 35 years old. And, he's had a great comeback, but he's still got a 5.5 ERA. They're going to need at least one or two pitchers from outside the organization. And they know that. When they were at the trade deadline, they were trying to find controllable pitching, good young pitching, that they could have for, you know, next 2, 3, 4 years, and they weren't able to do that, but that's what they're looking at.
Hey, let me just follow up on that, TR. In Colby Lewis's case, 35 years old, and he's got a 5.5 ERA, like you said. If you look at it a certain way, you could convince yourself he still has something left in the tank. I don't know how the Rangers feel about unearned runs and pitchers and where they should be charged. But 10 strikeouts in his last start, the one before that, 2 earned runs, but he did walk 4. Do you feel, just you, I'm asking what you've seen every day, does this guy, this tough guy that we all love, does he have anything left in the tank, do you think? And can you see him being on the club opening day next year?
I think the next 6 weeks they still need to look at him some more. I mean, he's had a good second half since the All-Star break. I think it's been about 5 or 6 starts. Pitched pretty well. He's pitched in the same style, never overpowering, good sharp slider, excellent command. I still think there's still some question if he still has got enough stuff left. You know, if he still has enough stuff to get hitters out. I think they're going to have to do that. Even if they bring him back next year, I don't think it'll be as a guaranteed spot in the rotation. I think it'd be 1 of 8 or 9 that would come in and compete for a job.
Looking ahead a little bit to next year, I mean, one player that's coming up through the system that everyone's talking about is Joey Gallo, obviously. Just 20 years old, left-handed hitting, third baseman. Not so much looking at a call-up this year, most likely, but next year, just spring training. I mean, you think he'd have a shot at opening day? You think they'd look at him and really consider him for the opening day roster next year?
Oh, I hope not. I mean, Allison, if you look at this guy, he's got 40 home runs, but the strikeout rate is way high. I mean, this guy's striking out a lot. This guy still has holes in his swing. This guy does not need to be in the big leagues next year. You know, he needs to be in AA, AAA. He's still got a lot of work to do. I mean, he can hit a lot of home runs. You know, are you looking at, you want a guy to be another Russell Branyon or another Mark Reynolds, or you want a guy who can develop into something like Troy Glaus or Adrian Beltre or something like that? And I think they got to be very patient with this kid, because if they put him up in the big leagues, you know, you look at Mike Holt, a guy that was with the Cubs, he's got some power, but he ended up striking out way too much. Now the Cubs had to send him down. I think the last thing the Rangers need to do is bring this guy up before he's ready to go. I think he needs a lot more time in the minor leagues.
Especially when you're coming off of an abysmal season and everyone's looking for something to – I guess the feeling is basically like a lot of these hurt guys are going to be better next year and that it'll be more of the Rangers that we're used to seeing. He certainly, it almost puts more pressure on a kid when he's got that kind of fanfare behind him to put him in that situation where everyone expects him to just come up and, you know, change the whole fortune of the team, which is completely unrealistic.
Yeah, I mean, they got a lot. They have a lot of good players in the minor leagues. They're probably some of them are just getting to AA. A few of them are in Class A. But this team is loaded with some prospects. So I think in 2 or 3 years, this team is going to rebound very strong and have a great young club again, kind of like where the Cubs were maybe last year, with all these guys right on the cusp. I think next year, and in 2016, you're going to see a lot of good young players come up here. So they just have to be careful not pull the trigger too quickly.
TR, of the young guys you've seen this year, from Nick Martinez to Odor to Sardinas, these guys, any of them that have really impressed you that you've looked at that guy and said, oh, man, this guy's going to have a great career, or a really good career?
Well, I think Nick Kapich is a guy that I like. Of course, he was up here last year. Of the new guys, you know, I wrote in the offseason that Nick Martinez was a guy to watch. I just hate to see that he's up here so quickly. Last Friday night, Nick Martinez went up against Garrett Richards of the Angels, and it was kind of interesting. If you look at their minor league records, Richards had like 200 innings in AA and AAA. Nick Martinez had 41. And if you look at Garrett Richards, it took him like 2 or 3 years for it to really click in. Now he's one of the best pitchers in the league. I think when you look at some of these guys, you gotta say, hey, these guys can be good, but we gotta give them time. We gotta give them development time. We gotta give them time in the big leagues. They're gonna struggle. You know, even Greg Maddux. You go back to Greg Maddux. You know, he struggled his first year in the big leagues. I think he had a 5 ERA his first time around. And Tom Glavine was the same way. Two guys who are in the Hall of Fame now this year. So I mean, you just can't expect these guys to just come up here like a Jose Fernandez and just suddenly dominate from the beginning. I mean, it rarely happens.
Okay, T.R. Sullivan, thank you very much. We will be checking in with you about the Texas Rangers as the season goes on. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the AL West.